Our presentation today is Row, What's Next? By our minister, Reverend Matt Aspen. This Sunday, January 22nd, marks the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court's decision that validated a woman's right to make her own health care decisions regarding pregnancy, which was overturned by the recent Dobbs decision. Where do we go from here? This sermon relates to our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Reverend Matt.
Good morning. In the summer of 1969, in upstate New York, right around the time of Woodstock, a young woman about to begin her freshman year of college found herself unexpectedly and uncomfortably alone with an older boy she had known since high school. Now a young man that had just returned from his first hard tour on the front lines with the American infantry in Vietnam. This young woman, the daughter of a judge and local business owner, part of a well-respected family in a small, close-knit town, doesn't like to talk about what happened that night. And she surely couldn't tell her family when she found out that she was pregnant. Somehow she hit her bump when she was home for Christmas break and arranged to deliver her baby and put it up for adoption. Of course, she went to the home where respectable girls went to spare their families the embarrassment of pregnancy out of wedlock, the social societal expectation back in those times. She gave birth to a small baby boy at a home for unwed mothers in the middle of March 1970. And to this day, she has never shared that fact with her parents. Just a few weeks later, in April of 1970, New York became the first state in the nation to legalize abortion. And it was ultimately the passage of this law that set off the chain of events that led to the ruling in the Supreme Court case Roe versus Wade on this exact day, 50 years ago today, that ensured the right of a woman to choose the best decision for her body, for her family, and for her community if she became pregnant, became the law of the land. Now, if you haven't already guessed, the baby in that story was me. And ever since I found my birth mom about 5 years ago and learned that I actually wasn't a cosmic love child conceived in peace and good vibes at Woodstock, I have consistently wondered how different that story might have been if abortion had been an option available to my mother to consider when she was faced with an unwanted pregnancy. The truth is, I might not be standing here wondering that question at all. And yet I still support a woman's right to choose when it comes to the healthcare decisions that affect her life. Now, maybe I'm a bit of a Pollyanna. If that be true, I wonder if it has anything to do with the unprecedented drop in crime rates that began nationwide the year I graduated from college and began my entrance into the adult world, about 18 years after the Roe decision came down. You see, that's what we learned. It took a good while to figure out. But for the longest time, social scientists just couldn't fathom why violent crimes, which had become an entrenched problem that was overwhelming all of the major cities in the country back in the late 1980s, suddenly fell off a metaphorical cliff beginning around 1992. Turns out, if your politics tell you to be tough on crime, one of the best things you can do is make sure women have the ability to decide whether or not they are currently prepared to support a new life being brought into this world. The truth is, the majority of you use, But of course, I can't say all because we believe in each person's right to determine their own personal truth based on their own experiences. But the majority of UUs support the right for a woman to make her own healthcare choices, including the decision to terminate a pregnancy. In the binary world of simplified politics, I suppose that makes the majority of us here say that we are pro-choice. I will freely admit that in my younger days, I would have labeled myself pro-choice without giving it too much thought. The flavor of politicians I favored tended to use that label, and the idea of the government coming in to dictate healthcare choices seemed ludicrous to me, especially since the right to terminate an unwanted pregnancy had been the law of the land for my entire life. But it wasn't until I journeyed with someone on the front lines of this work that I truly became a passionate supporter of this issue. My partner, the Reverend Denise Cawley, who, oddly and coincidentally, I actually met at seminary on this day 5 years ago, did her chaplaincy work at Planned Parenthood of Milwaukee. This was a position that had never existed before. And we spent long hours on the phone as students and friends, just sharing the journey, comparing notes, learning from each other, challenging each other. And she would share those stories with me. I have 100 examples that I could share that are just gut-wrenching examples of what happens when a person is forced to make a choice that is one of the hardest choices any human can possibly make. I'll share one as an example. There was a woman that lived up in Sheboygan, and I'm sharing this example to demonstrate that even though, you know, 2 months ago, it was legal to have abortion in this state, there were only three places that were performing that. I'm aware of Milwaukee, I'm aware of Madison, and
Sheboygan.
Thank you very much. All right. So this woman goes to the hospital, and it turns out her blood pressure was exceedingly elevated. She was in crisis, and it turned out it was an uninformed, she didn't know that she was pregnant. It turned out that there was something having to do with her pregnancy that was causing her body to react in this way. And she was going to die if this was not stopped. The hospital in the place that she was in would not perform the surgery. Even though at this point it was only 7 weeks in, at 7 weeks, it is like to be said, oh, it's a fetus. It's a small collection of cells that we're talking about. It doesn't look like anything. It looks like a stain on a paper. Unfortunately, that is the truth. But this hospital would not take the risk in Wisconsin to perform this life-saving surgery. So as they did with all people in these situations, they said, you have to make your way to Milwaukee to have this done. Which means she had to have the access and the ability to be able to get down there. She had to be able to get off of work. She had to be able to take away from her responsibilities. And then when she got there, because Wisconsin, she was forced to wait a mandated 3 days for consent to be sure that she had followed all the rules and all the laws that block access still under Roe. She almost died. This person eventually was able to get the healthcare that she needed, and she survived. But we literally talked about example after example after example after example of women that came in these situations, in different situations. Woman that had been shot by her boyfriend when he found out that she was pregnant, showed up at Planned Parenthood and needed support. There are so many stories. This is a story that there are stories. I know that there are dozens of stories in this room. Some that have been shared, some that may never be shared. The Milwaukee Planned Parenthood doctors have become lifelong friends and supporters of this type of intervention, this chaplaincy for helping people through these moments. Because what they learned empirically was that women who were offered unconditional love and support while they were navigating this tremendously personal and life-altering decision had far better outcomes than those that were trying to navigate the complexity of this decision unsupported. This morning, Reverend Denise is on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, the nation's sixth largest newspaper, loudly advocating for the positions our UU faith compels us to hold. Access to information so that people are educated about reproductive health and choices, and a woman's right to choose the best path for her if she does become pregnant. Reverend Denise was contacted a few weeks ago by a reporter, interviewed, photographed, and fact-checked over the past few weeks. And at the same time, because of the state of the world that we live in right now, she also knew that she had to prepare her church for the potential and highly likely danger that making such a public statement can bring in this world today. They've had to scramble to develop emergency plans and have hired a security detail to parole the church grounds this weekend and for the foreseeable future. And we are also very cognizant that it is not too difficult to look up Reverend Denise Colley, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and find our address. But here we are. We collectively made this decision to move forward when this request came in because we are Unitarian Universalists who believe in the interdependent web of existence and that what happens to one of us happens to all of us. We are unequivocally pro-choice. Our current democratically created principles do compel us towards a personal but also a responsible search for what is true and meaningful. And we work collectively to ensure that each of us, especially our children, have access to as much fact-based information as possible to help us learn how to make fully informed decisions. Our Whole Lives Sexual Education courses, or OWL, developed in conjunction with the United Church of Christ and taught around the world since 1999, is based on core values of respect, relationships, and responsibility. As a faith, we don't do religious education. We don't tell you what to think. Ours is rather religious exploration, a process that encourages children and all of us to understand that issues like abortion are complex, and there is no such thing as a simple decision to terminate a pregnancy. We promote education. We promote bodily autonomy. We promote access to safe, affordable, and readily accessible health care for all. And yet, in addition to the long battle many are gearing up for to restore the rights that have been lost by this recent Supreme Court decision and the many others that, if you look at the precedences that have been now cut, start to fall like dominoes if you actually look at that Supreme Court case. Those on the front lines of this fight are actually responding to the intersectionality of the issues surrounding abortion and are planting the seeds for the next level of this work, not just the restoration of Roe, but for the expansion of access. According to resources provided by the UU Congregational Reproductive Justice Action Guide, rather than seek to provide only choice for individuals, reproductive justice seeks to ensure access for everyone by addressing various barriers to care and resources that go beyond legalization. Reproductive rights and health strategies have often left people of color, disabled people, and queer people without access to the choices they seek to provide. Reproductive justice seeks to direct the strategy and movement beyond legality to accessibility. Goes on to say, our Unitarian Universalist faith affirms that all of our bodies are sacred, and that we are each endowed with the twin gifts of agency and conscience. Each of us should have the power to decide what does and doesn't happen to our bodies at every moment of our lives because consent and bodily autonomy are holy. And when disparities in resources or freedoms make it more difficult for certain groups of people to exercise autonomy over their own bodies, our faith compels us to take liberatory action. And the story I shared of that woman illustrates that concept perfectly. Different outcomes for people beginning the journey in different places. In the long struggle for reproductive justice, the Dobbs decision feels, for many, like our rights have gone from resting comfortably upon the summit of the mountain that was climbed by many people sitting in this room today, to having been knocked off a cliff and having to start all over again. Folks that have been fighting for the expansion of these rights are no doubt exhausted. And there are surely 100 things you can do to help if you want to get involved. But I'm not actually going to tell you what those things are today. Because if you are interested enough in these specific issues, you're probably already aware of much that I would share. And if you're not, it's unlikely that you're going to be moved to action just because I encourage you this morning to be. So instead, I'm just going to say, if you want to learn more and would like to get involved in this action, look for the Unitarian Universalist Congregational Reproductive Justice Action Guide, and you will find a well-thought-out resource that offers support from basic information, historical perspective, organizing tips, and much more. So, if I'm not going to ask you to get involved in this fight on this day, what then is my message? The words of encouragement I offer today are instead borrowed from the folks that are supposedly on the other side of this issue. What I encourage you to do today is to be pro-life. Honor your life. Honor the lives of your family, honor the lives of your friend, honor the lives of your neighbors. Because life is a miracle, and life is worthy of reverence and appreciation and care. Just living, just surviving takes a tremendous amount of energy. Raising our children, earning a living, maintaining a home, staying safe. I will never stand up here and ask you to do more than that. Ours is not a faith that uses guilt to compel us to give more than we have. And yet, Unitarian Universalists tend to be the kind of folks that tend to care about making the world as good as it can be for as many people and creatures as possible. And whether your greatest accomplishment has been getting out of bed and making it through another day alive, just like you did yesterday, or if you regularly organize and lead marches of thousands, wherever your social justice efforts fall on this continuum, I will never ask you to do more. Because I truly believe if any of us felt like we could be doing more, we would be doing more. So the only thing I will encourage you towards, instead, is tending to activities that feed your spirit. Because it's our spirit that is our fire. And fire is what is needed. We know that fire is needed to refresh the landscape. And it is most assuredly needed to light the way through times of darkness. And spirit, just like fire, needs air to breathe. In my mind, this should be a primary function of a church such as this. Because having connections with many people working collectively to make the world a better place is certainly soul-quenching, as is self-care and going outside and taking adequate time to mourn if you've just experienced a profound loss. The fact that employers in our country only tend to offer 3 days of time to grieve the loss of a family member demonstrates the absurdity of anyone on the right claiming the pro-life label. That is not how life works. Gardening is life-affirming, and so is meditation, and so is prayer, and so is coming to church on Sunday to be together. Being a contributing member of a church like this is a spiritual practice. When we come here, we learn things like compromise, how to take two people that maybe have a different perspective of how something could go and find common ground to move forward together. We learn how to organize. We learn at a small scale how to get a small group of people coordinated with schedules to show up to teach RE class on a Sunday morning. And those are the skills that then get ramped up into organizing a movement. If you are a Unitarian Universalist, you likely believe that the only place we have the actual ability to create heaven is here on earth. If heaven be a place with enough abundance and love for all. And if you want to be able to play a part in the creation of that world, then the challenge is really always the same thing. It's simply expanding our capacities. That means taking care of our bodies, it means taking care of our spirits, and it means taking care of each other. Because honestly, this is the most pro-life church community I've ever met. We are all here helping each other survive and flourish and thrive. I've seen you support each other in your struggles. And as everyone in this room knows, there is a lot of work to do to help manifest the life-affirming changes we collectively seek in this world. And that work is grueling, because there are powerful forces intentionally aligned and pushing us in the opposite direction, pushing for control, pushing to push things back the way they used to be in the good old days. We like to say that the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice, but it doesn't bend by itself. It takes people, and it takes time, and it takes a lot of effort, and it is not easy. So it takes people that are strong and grounded and resourced and educated and supported and all pulling in the same general direction. And that is what this faith is trying to help us do. So take care of your needs. Be pro-life for yourself. Make yourself strong. And then, with whatever capacity you have left, choose to support actions that support the rest of life. If you have capacity, I invite you to join me today at 1 o'clock at the Capitol for the next in what I'm sure will be a long series of continued gatherings to support reproductive rights. Because we are the only hope that we have. Blessed be.